Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Chris is here.
Hello.
Sarah's here.
Hello.
And you're here, ladies and gentlemen. Now, many of us travel abroad for holiday or work. In 2017, the Office for National Statistics, easy for them to say, said that there were 72.8 million visits overseas by UK residents. Now, one would hope that the majority of these visits were productive or provided nice holiday times. However, some of us have experiences when things go wrong or awry when away from home. So then, today's question, what's the trickiest situation you found yourself in when abroad?
I've got one.
Go on then.
Oh, you're a well-traveled man.
Chrissy,
I knew
baby.
You'd have something.
It's a few years ago now. It was when I was working at the UN and I was going to Burundi. And I was going to Burundi.
Whoa, what an exotic one.
Central to South Africa, just by Rwanda.
Fine, yeah.
Beautiful place. What an amazing place to go. Anyway, so I'm...
Can I just say, what a great start.
Yeah.
I know, I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, when I was in France. No, yeah, Burundi.
I was a bit too pissed in Ibiza. No. Yeah. Chris, when I'm working for the UN, going to Burundi, that is the kind of entertainment you get on Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers.
It was a brilliant time. And we in our office, because they book so many flights, we have a flights booking guy. Mm-hmm.
Did the coup not go to according to plan?
No, not quite. So he was booking me a flight to go to Bujumbura, and he booked me, I had to go via Nairobi.
Oh yeah, in Kenya.
Yeah, so I check my bags in.
You're not getting a direct flight to Burundi from here, are you?
No, yeah. No, but I obviously just... You get into autopilot sometimes at the airports, don't you? Yeah. Just checking your luggage.
Much
you don't
like the plane,
anything.
Yeah.
and I just didn't listen to the person at the desk.
Oh,
and
nice.
Then when I'm on the flight to Nairobi, all of a sudden it pops into my head. She said that she checked my luggage into Nairobi. And I'm like, no, I'm going to Burundi. I'm going to Bujumbura. And then I look and I've got an hour connection time between my two flights.
That's never enough.
Never enough.
Even, I mean, I've been to Nairobi Airport. I flew out in and out of Nairobi Airport, but I can't really remember it that much. But I mean, it's reasonably big.
I imagine it's a decent size.
Yeah, but even if you're at...
you've got to get a visa to get through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of...
$50.
Well, even if you went to a smallish airport within... the European Union, and at the time of recording, that's not a problem. So even if you had an hour, so if you're changing in somewhere, I don't know, Paris, Madrid, take your pick, I would still be a bit like, oh, it's a bit tight.
You probably need a good 2 or 3 hours to be able to exit. So you get your visa, you exit, so it'll be an hour to do that. And then obviously you've got to get your luggage off the conveyor belt. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to go and check in again.
Yeah.
And I've got an hour.
I already feel anxious.
Yeah, the flight...
Just listening to this.
Flight's 20 minutes late, taking off.
Yeah. Oh,
and you know what always happens, don't you? You're waiting in the aisle of the plane and people are taking their sweet ass time
of
getting off the flight.
Are.
So I
just another tricky situation abroad, guys.
So I'm on the plane, and you know me by now, and I'm just like, God, I actually need some help here. Like, I'm going to be stranded in Nairobi at about 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning.
Sometimes only the Lord can help.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Now, let's be honest. I mean, again, I've been to Nairobi. Like, it's a dangerous place.
Yeah.
To be fair, that's not nasty. That's the truth of the matter.
I just wouldn't. Like, I was stranded. You'd have to obviously find a taxi randomly, get to a random hotel, hope that there's rooms and all that stuff. So I get onto the stairs going from the plane, and I speak to a guy in a visi jacket, tell him my situation. He just looks at me and shakes his head like, you've got not a cat's chance in hell, pal. And so, but bless him, he just said, come with me. And he went and spoke to somebody. And this is where it gets fun.
Right.
They smuggle me through immigration, which is highly illegal. So they smuggle me around this room.
Did you?
They took my passport, I think, just in case I wanted to do a runner.
Yeah.
And then
I'm sorry, smuggled you through immigration?
Yeah, they took me to this.
That's big.
What?
Yeah, I mean, highly legal. So he took me in this side room, then I went down this little corridor, out another door. There might have been another door in there as well. It's irrelevant to the story. But
lot of doors.
But details, man.
Another miracle. My bag is the first off the conveyor belt.
What?
And then they smuggle me back through, which again is illegal. So two smuggling operations.
So which country
operations. Are you in now? I'm back in airspace in Nairobi.
Right, okay. What?
And then I think the clock is ticking down. Mm. And they said, we're going to get you a buggy. And I was just like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be shooting through the airport. This thing takes ages to turn up. And I basically
Do you have a jetpack?
Yeah, but that's what I needed to get across the airport to my flight.
Yeah.
Anyway, and then I get to, the buggy finally turns up and they just shoot me across the airport. Very dangerous ride. And then they were like pointed at the plane in the distance.
Are you on the tarmac?
I'm now on the tarmac. What? And they're like, that's your plane, run. And basically I'm running across the tarmac and they're like, the people at the doors are ushering me on, going, come on, come on, it's going to leave. And I get on there and I am.
Did you not shout? Just, you literally can hold it. I appreciate air traffic controller in their ear.
But I just fall into a heap in the plane, like covered in sweat and stress. And I was like, oh God, thank you. Like, because I made it. But I was just like, because, you know, and this is the problem, right? When you're in a foreign country, everything feels, you're on edge because you don't know anything.
Yeah, because you're literally in a foreign place.
I actually feel a bit stressed retelling that story.
My blood pressure shot up.
You know when you watch a James Bond film and they have the bit at the start,
yeah,
where it's kind of, oh, what's going on?
And it's, chase.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then he just gets away or it sets the scene. It's a bit like that.
There you go.
I'm surprised you didn't have, for the older listeners among us, you know, a little Cadbury's milk tray tucked under the arm and you handed it to the SD with this.
Turtleneck in Burundi. That would have been brilliant and hot.
Blimey.
So, yeah.
That
it was great, though.
So stressful.
Yeah. Was it a small plane?
Yeah, it wasn't. It wasn't.
So, like the stairs on the door, if you see what I mean.
Yes, exactly.
I had that envisaged.
That's the ones that are like, come on, run.
Rather.
Bless them. I mean, absolute miracle for me.
That's class.
There you go.
I have an airport related one, actually. It's not quite as dramatic, but basically we really started with kind of adrenaline, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I was on my little holiday after I finished my, I want to say A levels.
Say it then.
You can do it.
I think it was A levels. Yeah.
So how old are you then? About 18?
No, they have numbers now, by the way, not letters anymore.
What do?
GCSEs. Or A levels, I forget.
No, anyway. I thought you said A levels. I've said, how old are you? Are you 18?
I was 18 at this point.
Sorry.
No, it would have been.
Because some people outside the UK wouldn't know what A levels
that's
are.
That's good point. Good point.
And you could have been a genius child and done it at 12.
I mean, I was, but they wouldn't let me go to Corfu by myself at that point.
That's fair enough.
So off to the Greek islands then.
We're on the plane and I was feeling a little bit iffy, just like, you know, when you kind of, I'm coming down with a really nasty cold or something, and I get quite travel sick anyway, so I was feeling a bit sicky, but I was just like,
awful,
whatever.
Awful business.
And we land in Corfu Airport, and at the arrivals bit, before you can get through, you know, you've got to show your passport or whatever.
Or you get smuggled.
Or you get smuggled. Yeah. I could have done with being smuggled.
You could have done.
Because what happened was they had some thermal
imaging cameras.
Apparently
is now
cameras.
An option for people. It's not an option. Don't smuggle yourself.
Yeah, please don't smuggle yourself or anyone else.
Yeah, bad idea.
They had these thermal imaging cameras because this was the height of the swine flu epidemic.
Oh, how long ago was it?
So this would have been 2009?
Yeah, okay.
I have to say 10.
And as everyone walks through, if you're normal, you come up a sort of grey. And I'm going through and on this camera I show up bright green.
Ooh.
Suggesting I've got a massive, massive temperature. And all hell breaks loose. They're like, stop,
the Greek authorities are just surrounding you.
I'm like ushered into this side room. No one will come near me. into the side room. They push me into this room. All my friends are waved through and they have to go through without me.
Mm-hmm. I bet they did. See ya.
They cracked on with a holiday.
Well, I'll tell you about that in a minute. So basically, I'm in this room. People come in these like literal space suits. Give me one I've got to put on.
What are you thinking at this point?
I was just like, I'm dying. I don't know. I've got like the plague.
Are you like
the
start at the end of the world with an outbreak?
I was like, I'm patient zero here. And so I get put in an ambulance. Like, no one speaks any English. They take me off to hospital. So I'm like,
you have no idea what's going on.
Not a clue. Luckily, one of my friends who's with me, her dad lives on the island, speaks Greek and English. So they were like, right, we'll get my dad, we'll meet you at the hospital. So they go off to the hospital. I get to the hospital. I'm in this room. Doctors still don't speak any English. They're trying to take my blood. Turns out the only words this doctor does know in English are swear words, because he somehow messes it up, drops the syringe on the floor, starts swearing, there's blood going everywhere.
I love how he uses the English words to swear, just so you know that him dropping that blood really is not ideal.
Just want to connect to make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
In this really difficult situation.
Yeah, I didn't mean to do that, by the way. I tell that.
And literally, and, so then I go from this room, they shunt me into this other room, and my friends appear at the end of the corridor. Sarah! And I was like, guys! They're not allowed anywhere near me.
That was the last Sarah saw of her friends.
So basically, I spent, I think it was about two, three days in this hospital.
No. Bloody Nora.
Not really knowing what was going on. They thought I was so contagious because they thought I had swine flu. I was having to like take my own temperature and shout it through the door at one point.
What, in swear words?
Well, quite.
Oh, the dad was there.
They must have found someone eventually.
Yeah.
And then at one point, I was like lying in this bed. I'd been hallucinating because I was obviously like, I just clearly had a temperature. I was really not well. And I heard, Sarah. And I was like, what's that? And then I get up out the bed and I look out the window, and they didn't have aircon. It's just this big open window.
Yeah.
You know, huge.
And you don't need air conditioning in Greece.
In Greece,
do you?
Exactly. And my friends, two of them, Emily and Rachel, bless them, with Emily's dad, are standing outside the window, you know, however many, five floors down.
Yeah.
Waving up at me, just like, we found you.
And they're like throwing burgers through the window.
Honestly, that's what people, like people bring, they at one point had to bring me toilet roll.
Oh
yeah, it was that bad.
What was wrong with you in the end?
So basically, after all of this, I finally, like, I think it was Em's uncle actually came and broke me out and was like, we can look after her, don't worry. And they never even found out what was wrong with me. They think it was just like, maybe a bit of tonsillitis or something.
Oh, flipping Nora.
So after all that.
All that.
That's so bad.
How long were you meant to be on holiday for?
Say that again.
Were you away for a week or 2 weeks?
We was away for a week.
So most of the holiday was just
a
write-off.
And then I couldn't really go in the sun or anything like that.
Oh, bless you.
Yeah. That's so bad, though, the way you've been treated there.
Honestly, and like, the hospital's now been closed down. It was... It was awful. It was so awful.
Was that because of your... Is that your legacy?
My whistle
They found loads of burgers on the side where they've been launched up to Sarah.
My stash of
Was it because you
rolls?
Contaminated the hospital, or was it because of a petition you started?
I mean, I would have done all... honestly, it was so bad. And the toilets, I remember at one point... So I had this drip in, and it was like... You know, if like a trolley, if you've got a wonky trolley?
Yeah.
It was a wonky drip trolley.
Oh, yeah.
So it's attached intravenously to me. And I had to go to the toilet, and I had to sort of pick up my thing and run down the corridor with it because it was so wonky. Get into the toilet. It won't fit under the top of the door, so I'm like wrestling it in. And then there's a woman in the next door cubicle just having a fag.
Yeah, why wouldn't you smoke in a hospital? Yeah.
So basically, that was my experience of getting off a plane and having a total mare.
Sucks. Save our NHS.
Yeah. Exactly.
Blimey, O'Reilly. Yeah, I mean, any kind of being ill, I mean, food poisoning, I've heard it, it's an awful business. Absolutely awful business. I once nearly got deported from Russia.
Go on.
Yeah. I always knew you were a wrong'un.
Well, would that not be a feather in the cap?
Yeah, true.
You know what the Russians are like.
Yeah, fair point.
If you're listening, we love your work.
Yeah, and but we're not hackers. But we're not going to go there and perform live. Yeah, I was with a group from an organisation, a charity called UCCF, and we went over there, and it was a sort of a football-y type trip, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Aww,
and
nice.
Yeah, so I think it was about 10 or 11 of us, and we met our sort of contact there who worked for this UCCF charity at Moscow airport. And we immediately, so we arrived at Moscow, we didn't see much of Moscow, and was straight on a train to a little city called Chelyabinsk, which is 32 hours on a train from Moscow. God. So it's Trans-Siberian Railway line. That's the sort of the beginning of it.
Yeah.
At Moscow. Because it goes all the way, I think, to like southeastern China or somewhere. Yeah. It's absolutely outrageous. So we met her. She was from Northern Ireland, but spoke very good Russian because she'd been living there for years with this organisation and so on. So she met us, and off we went into the inky blackness of the Russian night sky on this train. And it was great. The trains are great there. I thoroughly recommend it.
I'd love to try the air.
Oh, it was fantastic, yeah. And at about 3 or 4 in the morning, because the beds are decent there. You get a decent night's sleep on those trains.
Did you have little rooms, or was it?
You can do, yes. Yeah, so you could have 4 beds to a room, or you can have like an open kind of plan.
Nice.
Kind
open
of thing,
plan.
Yeah,
open plan. That makes it sound much fancier than I imagine being.
Think Scandinavian kitchen. And
the IKEA of trains.
And we were on the train, and you were playing cards and whatnot, and then everyone went to bed, and at about 3 or 4 in the morning, these three Russian, what would they be? Sort of, they were sort of like military men, but they were more sort of policey type people, but they weren't police. Just imagine what you're picturing: stern men.
I've got an image in my head.
Yeah,
who are not every Bond film I've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly. So picture that, and that's what it is. And they come on, and they're kind of basically doing the rounds, checking everybody on the train, what you up to. So they come across us. So it's quite, you know, I mean, obviously they have enough travellers that they go through. It's not that rare, but it's reasonably rare for sort of 10, you know, Western lads to be on there. Anyway, it would appear that in our passport, somebody at the airport didn't put a stamp in there that we needed, so not our fault.
Yeah,
and then suddenly it's kind of they grab a couple of the passports and then they're off. Now, fortunately, you see, if we didn't have I forget her name, it was years ago now, the woman from Northern Ireland who spoke Russian. If we didn't have her, we'd have been buggered.
Yeah. Really?
See you later. So she goes off and starts to try to negotiate with these guys, and I give her
What would they have done? Just
They would have turned us back around and sent us back to the airport, and we'd have been deported. And she basically started to call their bluff, because she came back after a while, and we're sitting there going, crap, what is wrong?
Yeah.
And she came back and said that basically they said you don't have they don't have this stamp in their passport, and she was saying, well, that's not our fault, is it? It's not like we don't control the stamp that you whack it with. You know, that's the person in the airport who's failed. Immigration has failed to do that. We've got our visas, because you have to send it away. You get a Russian visa. We've got our visas. We have done everything. We have our paperwork. We're just missing this thing. And as if we all snuck through the airport sort of thing. We're
well,
not Chris Gall.
You know?
This isn't Nairobi, and they're not Chris Gall. He's may or may not what she said. And but this is all going on. So we don't know. So we only know this when she comes back, and eventually it's fine. Yeah. After about an hour.
Stressful.
Imagine being on the train and not knowing what was going on. And you're just a normal Russian citizen. You're thinking, what the bloody hell's going on? So she came back, and what happened was, the guys that even she was pretty firm herself. I give her all the credit in the world. And she said that she was saying, well, look, we've got it all. That's their mistake at the airport. You can't penalise
them.
Good on
her. Yeah, she stood up to these three guys. With the Russian military police or whoever they are.
Sorry, was she a Brit who could speak Russian, or was she a Russian who was helping?
No, she's from Northern Ireland, yeah. So she's a British citizen, yeah.
Yeah, that is Russian. What a brave woman.
I know, yeah. So she stood up to them. I love that. Proper Northern Irish.
Yeah.
No messing around.
Not taking any rubbish.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because if she was from Surrey or somewhere in England, it'd be okay, well, all right, well, can we go back in the morning?
Probably my fault. Don't worry, lad. I'll just turn around.
Did I bump into you?
Yeah, exactly. Keep the passports, honestly. We'll find another one. So two of them started to thaw a bit, but one of them was like, I'm not having this. And he started saying things like, well, you might have drugs with you. You might have smuggled arms into the country. And she's going, what, for this, like, little Christian charity where they turned up to play football? And she's gone, she said, all right, fine. She said, come and check our bags. She started goading. She was like, come and check our bags. Come on, we'll have a look at them then, if you think
Oh my goodness.
And then eventually she called the bloke, and the guy was like, amazing. The guy realised, and she was like, okay, fine. And
are they looking for bribes? Is that part of it?
I don't know.
So I wonder if they're like playing a hard game, and actually in the end going, this one, she's not giving up, and we obviously they don't get the gig here, that there's a bribe involved.
That is entirely possible. I mean, that was more nearer to the time that I nearly got denied entry into Ghana.
Go on.
Guys, I mean, I know I was denied because I was patient zero, but come on.
It's a Christian football charity thing. You know,
the least likely people to do anything dodgy. Just like, want to play football.
Yeah, exactly.
Check
out their dodgy sandals.
Yeah, right. That was with an organisation called Ambassadors in Sport. Four of us flew over from England. Other people came from, there's a few Americans, some Nigerian guys, I think it was an Aussie guy. So it was, you know, real League of Nations stuff. And we turned up, and the oldest guy of our party, who was about late 30s, I was probably early mid-20s at the time, he was, because he was the oldest and the more responsible, he was tasked with having the paperwork and so on and so forth. And he forgot to bring where we were staying. And we turned up, and everyone's gone through at this point, yeah. and the four of us are sat there. Now, we were with two other lads who were like late teens, and they were wonderfully oblivious to what was going on. And I was looking at this guy who's called, I think his name is Martin. And I'd, you know, travel a little bit to know when situations are good or bad. And I was looking at him going, they could send us back on a plane right now. And he was like, yeah, that's possible. So Martin tried to sweet talk the guy, and he said, look, can I just go outside? Can you let me through? These lads will stay here, and I'll find the person who's meeting us, and they'll tell us. So he agreed to do that. So I was like, thank goodness. Martin comes back. He goes, he weren't there. He wasn't there. So eventually we had to I sort of entered the negotiations as well. We pleaded with this guy.
You brought out the big guns.
Yeah, exactly.
Silver tongue speller.
The velvet guns, and we sort of, I think, informally bribed him. I don't know. We did, nothing changed hands, but we said, look,
in a British way, which is, I could take you to the sporting event.
Yeah, he said, look, if I let you through, when you come back through, you have to give me like this football shirt and all this kind of stuff.
We were really?
Yeah, of course we will, mate. Yeah, and then we never saw him again. We managed to get into Ghana. We had a great time.
I moved to America for a year once, and I went over.
Are you in California? Weren't
yeah, and so you have to get obviously a visa, and is it the ETA?
Esther.
That's
Esther form. Yeah. And ETA's Canada.
So I'm going with a very good friend of mine, and he's a lovely lad, very intelligent, but not so in this case. And we get to
because the ETA forms getting into America, they suddenly sprung that on us.
Yeah,
because
that website just looks like it's fake.
It does. But yeah. I remember when I went a few years ago, and someone just, there was a little throwaway comment about a week before I went, have you got your ESTA form? I was like, what's that?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, bloody hell, yeah.
I think now when you do it, the on the website, the you know, whoever you buy your flights from, they start to get you to do it.
Right. Because they've had so many people getting it wrong.
You know, we're moving to America for a year, and we get to the bit, you know, where they stamp your passport and that. And my friend Ryan's like, mate, where did you put? He's from Plymouth. Where did you put your forms? I was like, they're in my hand luggage. Where are your forms? He's like, I think I put them in my suitcase.
Oh man!
So he's, and you know, Americans.
At least he did it though.
But the thing is obviously he couldn't go and get his suitcase because it's on the other side of the immigration desk. So they take him into this holding room for hours.
Oh yeah.
And I was like trying to speak to people. I was ringing them. I was like, are you going to deport the guy? Like, what's going to happen?
They're
like,
that can happen.
You're just going to have to wait and see, aren't you? And eventually,
American border agents.
Yeah. They don't mess around.
No, they're pretty serious about their border. We know that.
Yeah, sure.
So they, but they, in the end, they let him go. He managed to talk his way out of it and say to him, like, you know, if we go and get my luggage. And you know what? It's like, no, we're not doing that. It's like, but that would solve it all within 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, do you know, apparently I've heard that if you're taken aside and you're put into one of those rooms, they only start, if you like, processing people once the room's full.
Yeah.
So if you're the first one and you've got a long wait, because a friend of mine that had that, he went over to just give a talk at a company that the American office. Mm. So he wasn't actually doing any paid work, but he ticked he was working, didn't have a visa, was stuck in that room for goodness knows how long, no food or anything, and then was deported back.
Yeah.
What? It's mad. Although there's another story just leaped to mind where another friend of mine who was flying from Canada to America, and he'd left his passport at the you know, the sort of the lounge, if you like, where you're waiting, or the holding pen, whatever you want to call it. And it just slipped out of his pocket or whatever it was. But he got on the plane and he arrived and he was like, I don't know where my passport is. He said the first question when he was taken into that room, the first question he was asked is, sir, did you eat your passport? And he said, how often does this happen that's the first question?
I guess, yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, but eventually they phoned.
Stateless and all that sort of stuff. Then
well, they phoned, I think they spoke to Toronto Airport, wherever it was, and they said, we've got his passport, so he was okay.
Wow. Insane.
Did you eat your passport? Go on, Sarah.
I was going to say, we actually, I asked the listeners if they had any stories.
Dear
we actually had quite a few, either sort of document related or airport related.
Oh, so yeah.
That's obviously the bit that really gets people.
Yeah.
That's your more serious stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, because that's where you're like, there are police officers.
You're at the mercy of
I'm
other.
I'm obsessed though with checking my passport, my boarding pass. I'll check it every 2 minutes.
Yeah,
it might have gone.
Yeah. Becky Byford, who I think we actually had a story from her on another episode.
Good old Bex.
Yeah, she loves it. Thanks, Becky. She sent us a story which said, when going through security for an internal flight in China, the security person said it wasn't my passport. They even asked me to recite my passport number. I had to try and explain that my visa photo was a recent one. So presumably her passport, you know, my passport one's from when I'm about like 9 or something. I don't know. In the end, another guard with better English had to come over. It was terrifying. I was let in, but it was close. I've never sweated so much in my life.
Yeah, again, China, not one of those countries you want to be messing around
with. You don't want to mess around with. Absolutely not. We had another airport-related one from Vishnu Chari. So he said, I was on my way home to Melbourne for my sister's wedding in India. Had been booked on a flight via Kuala Lumpur. The first flight landed at Kuala Lumpur at 5 a.m. and the connecting flight took off at 8. So
Not too long.
Not too long. No. Not as quite short as your connecting one. He said, to make matters worse, I had a university assignment to finish off and submit when I got home. And this was back in the online days. So you've got to do it in person. I got to the gate for my connecting flight a full 2 hours before takeoff. I let the flight attendants know I'm sitting in the corner, but I'm really tired. I might fall asleep. Please don't forget me.
Just another tricky situation abroad, everybody.
As you could predict, I fell asleep. The flight attendant forgot me.
No.
I woke up just after the plane had reached the runway for takeoff.
Oh.
I begged and I guilt tripped the airline staff to get me on the next flight. They did smooth it over and got me home for free. But I ended up having to do my assignment in a draft email in my Hotmail account in 10-minute time blocks because my PC kept locking me out. I got home 12 hours later. Thankfully, didn't fail that subject
at uni. No. He managed to just about bring it right round.
Oh, that could have ended.
Yeah.
Ask for an extension, mate.
Absolutely. I have a fantastic story. It's not one of my own about, combining the two of getting into a country and someone saying, is that you in your passport photo?
No.
This is magnificent. It's a friend of mine. He lives in New York and he has a twin brother, right?
Here we go.
So they were traveling through Central America and they were going from Panama into Costa Rica. Now, there's a border crossing there, as I understand it, which is just a bridge which goes from one country to the other. Right. Now, fortunately, those two countries are much more like the safer countries around there.
Yeah.
They've got very good relations with the US. I mean, Costa Rica doesn't even have an army, I don't think, or a recognized army. It's protected by the US Army. So that's the kind of relations they have. Because other Central American countries like Nicaragua and Honduras, very bad reputations. Honduras murder rate's terrible, blah, blah, blah. But Panama and Costa Rica, two of the more holiday-type destinations. So not too bad as they go. So they get a taxi to the border crossing. And this is quite, this is a very, very relaxed, not informal, because a border crossing can't be informal, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
But it's not a massive one.
It's not guns and gates and all this stuff.
Exactly, yeah. So it's a bit of an outpost. So they crossed over there. And my friend, he went through. And his brother didn't have his passport. They got out of the taxi driver, and he was like, where's the passport? And he was like, oh my goodness, that's ridiculous. Well, we're screwed now, aren't we?
Yeah.
So I said, well, I'll tell you what. And they looked and they said, look, see that fence over there? I'll go through and then I'll chuck the passport over to you. That's how relaxed it was in that border. I've never been over that border myself.
I feel stressed already.
So this guy goes
Sarah's
through.
Sarah's not a rule breaker.
Right? Don't worry.
I mean, that's the ultimate rule breaker.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, they hadn't really, I think they probably thought once we get to Costa Rica, we'll go to the American embassy and all that. So we'll be okay. So he goes through, and the guy looks at him in the little hut and da-da-da, there you go, 30-day visa free or whatever it was, no questions asked. And he goes through, lobs his passport over. His brother waits like 10 minutes, identical twin, waits 10 minutes, goes through. And he said the guy in the hut like looks at him like as if he's going mad, thinking, am I seeing that? Like, what? I just let you...
Actual deja vu.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, he was like quite sort of weirded out, but at the same time probably didn't speak any English and whatnot. So he's thought to himself, well...
starts to push away the vodka bottle. So.
Yeah, exactly. What are you thinking?
I'm going to give that one up.
Yeah, well, he's thinking to himself, well, you've got a passport and all the rest of it, all checks out.
You do look like...
So he gets in. So they start walking down the bridge into Costa Rica, and they hear, hey, and all this. And they turn round, and it's the taxi driver who's waving one of the guy's passports. He's lost it in the back of the taxi. So they go back, and they're like, okay, we've just hoodwinked the border control guy to let us in. What's he going to do? Fortunately, he found the funny side of it, and they all just started roaring with laughter, and they pressed it, and they were okay.
There's definitely some countries that wouldn't find that funny.
They could have been in prison for that. Oh my God, that has really stressed me out.
It reminds me, actually, when I went to Tijuana when I was in California, and that is, you just walk.
That's a crazy board. I've been over there.
Yeah, but it's just, like, you just walk through a little sort of room, and then you press a button, don't you? And if the light goes green, you can walk and not show your passport to anybody. And if it goes red, that's when you
what,
do
you
it.
Just so look a bit dodgy. So.
It's just random. They just don't care who leaves. They're just like, as long as you're leaving the US, we don't care. Obviously, on the other side, coming back, there's miles of checks. Yeah, yeah. But to leave, there's no check.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just find that crazy. Like, no one knew I'd left the country.
Yeah, that's mad.
There's no checks. There's nothing
that
recorded.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I do actually have what, like, the ones that we've talked about so far haven't been too, like, you're in imminent danger.
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, my boyfriend has a story which, when he tells it to me, I'm literally just like, I don't understand. What on earth is your life? So he, when he was at university, he did an internship with a mining company looking for gold.
As you do.
In Kenya.
Oh, there you go.
No, back again. In Nairobi.
So they
got smuggled in.
They got in, perfectly legal, all got the right visas, fine, unlike some people. Mm-hmm. But then, so the company, they find this area, which they think, right, yep, this is where we want to do some digging here. So they speak to the person who they, as far as they're aware, owns the land. They agree, you know, the compensation fee and all this kind of stuff. They crack on, but then it turns out there's a bit of a dispute about who owns the land. It's two brothers, and it's, I would imagine they don't get on. And the whole village ends up getting dragged into this. And there's this, this huge argument going on. And then suddenly, the focus shifts to the mining company. And the whole village turns on them.
Blimey.
And they basically have to jump into the pickup truck.
And get the hell out of there.
Get out of there. The whole village are chasing them and throwing things at them, throwing stones at them.
Bloody hell.
And they just had to get out and never went back.
Wow. Are you being that car going, who's got the contract?
Yeah.
But we didn't bother. I didn't think they needed
that
one.
That is like Last Chopper out of Saigon sort of stuff, isn't it?
Honestly, it's insane. That's and on mad. That on that same...
Has he been back to Kenya?
He hasn't. On that same trip, he also got malaria.
Oh, bloody normal.
Yeah.
What a flipping...
It was not a successful time.
Horrendous stuff. Horrendous stuff.
Yeah. We actually did have a couple more from...
Oh, well, far away. Let's finish with them.
They were great. So a quick one from Aditya Bharadwaj, who's actually listening in India. He says he's a huge fan of the show.
Oh.
So thanks, Aditya. He said, we went to the Seychelles and accidentally stumbled into a tax haven shell company with friends.
And they were chased away by the villagers.
He just said, it was a photocopying shop. I needed a copy of my passport. We only knew the next day as the Panama Papers came out.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. Wow.
So I assume he didn't get in any trouble, but but yeah, that's a bit of a dodgy one
there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then finally, Jamie, forgive me if I say your name wrong, Jamie. Jamie Guyon. He said, I was exchanging money in Bali. We naively thought the official money exchange signs next to every street stall must be legit because they were so common. Mm. We went to the one with the best rate, much better than the UK. It was dark. No story that begins, it was dark, ever and all. We were led through the back of the stall to a graveled car area and a wooden shack.
Here we go.
Dark, check. Wooden shack, check.
The world's local bank.
There's a man with an axe, check.
We handed over £600 in large notes and they piled what we thought was 11 million rupiah in a huge pile and gave it to us. At the same time, people kept walking around us, talking to us, making us look away. We got back to our hotel. We only had 7 million rupiah. We'd lost over a third of our spending money. The experience was terrifying. It makes you feel absolutely stupid for falling for something so silly. I told the same story at home. The exact same thing happened to my best friend, but he'd been too embarrassed to tell anyone. I now tell everyone who goes to Bali so it doesn't happen to them. Use cash machines.
You've all been warned.
So there we are, PSA.
Did any of you guys, because the word million was involved, I was like, yeah, but you've still got 7 million.
And it's like,
in my head, it's obviously not million pounds.
Do you know what, actually? While we've been saying this, I've suddenly remembered, and we will finish on this one. Well,
no, I love these. These are great.
In fact, this one is the most ridiculous one, actually, if I may suggest.
So this has slipped your mind?
The reason why it slipped my mind is because it was a fella who I worked with. This would be sort of 10, 15 years ago. But I didn't really know the guy, but I just remember chatting to him. He was with his girlfriend and they were traveling around. It was somewhere in Eastern Europe. I want to maybe say Romania. I can't remember, but this is like in the 80s. They were at the airport about to leave. Military coup. Can't leave the country. a military coup. Basically, the military came in. It may not be Romania.
So
no commercial flights in or out.
Yeah.
We're in control. Suddenly, armed forces turn up and you're sitting there absolutely...
Of course you are.
Because that again, you're like, am I actually in real danger?
Yeah. Now, they were okay because it's of no use for any regime to kill a load of Western tourists. Or any tourists, of course, don't have to be Western, obviously, but they happen to be Western tourists. And they were taken away from the airport and put up in a hotel nearby. And they're just waiting there. And they're basically
the new
regime are deciding, right, when should we give a window of opportunity for a plane to come in and take these people? Because we don't really want these people, but at the same time, you have to control the perimeter.
Yeah.
You can't have any Tom, Dick and Harry coming in. So the next day they go to the airport. I don't think a plane turned up. Mm. Next day they went back and a plane turned up, and it was quite clear that this plane was not going to have enough room for everybody. They opened the doors and he was like, right, love, we're getting on that plane. Yeah. And he said it was like a flipping sprint and everyone just piled and ran towards this plane. It took off and not everybody got on it.
Oh, my goodness.
They got on it, though. They were okay. So, yeah.
Wow.
They don't come much trickier than that.
If anything, this episode has made me never want to leave the country ever again. I'm staying here now.
I used to, when I was at the UN, every time I'd go abroad, you'd have to put your details into this system in case those things happen, and then you're the first out.
I don't get that with anymore. The UN is different here, I think, Oh, dear. Well, there we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers. No doubt you have your own stories and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, send them in. We want to hear more.
We hope we've not put the fear of God in you about all this sort of stuff. But make sure you do subscribe to the podcast, everybody, so you don't miss an episode. And find us on Twitter and Insta at AQQAPod. There we are. Nice one, Sarah.
Nice one, Marcus.
Nice one, Chris.
Good one, pal.
Nice one, everybody. We'll see you next week.